tonight and tomorrow night. Might say, as far as tonight and your time in bowling, you could get more games in if you bowl it down those little gutters on the side. Get more for your money that way. Some of you I know do that anyhow. Philippians 1:27. Only let your conduct be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that of God. For unto you it is given in behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which he saw in me, and now here to be in me. We have talked quite a bit this particular week about our conduct and our need to behave in a way that is becoming the gospel of Christ. And that thought there is in connection with, and Paul uses these type of illustrations, and we'll talk about another one tonight, but this is in connection with citizenship. You might just make a note. The thought of conduct and our living and our conversation with respect to the gospel is in relation to citizenship. He's talking about behaving as a good citizen, and of course we take that in a spiritual sense as well as a physical sense. We are to be good citizens. That's very clear from the book of Romans, that we are to obey the powers that be. And they are ministers of God. And we are to obey them and to behave accordingly. But it's true, isn't it, as heavenly citizens, we are also to be behaving in a certain way. So there is the idea of conduct and citizenship. And then there is the thought of combat, in the sense of standing fast in one spirit. And the thought there is one of a soldier. So if conduct is connected with being a citizen, then combat is with regard to being a soldier. And then tonight we come to the phrase, the part of the verse that is actually the theme, which is on the wall, that we, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. And here the thought, really conveyed by these words, is one of an athlete. And you will find that Paul uses these type of pictures fairly frequently. Things like being a soldier and being an athlete. Also, he uses one being a farmer and so forth, and we'll look at that a little bit tonight as well. And so he says that these saints were to be striving together for the faith of the gospel. Now I trust as we've talked about before, this verse is the turning point in this epistle. Everything prior to it has to do with Paul's condition and the conditions in Rome, and then the hinge turns and we have the thought of, okay, only let your conversation there in Philippi, which he knew from a report that had been given to him, was not this way, that there was contention, there was a striving against each other. It's amazing, isn't it? In the same assembly, we can have saints actually, not only just that they're out of harmony. It's one thing, you know, if I'm singing with you, typically I'm out of harmony. Typically I'm not carrying the tune correctly. But I'm not really against you. I don't set out to counteract your singing. But it's another thing, isn't it, for someone to actually be at odds with one another to the point where you are in contention head on head, one on one, trying to, as it were, defeat the other person. And you might, and I hope maybe if that's the way it is in your assembly or in your lifetime, you have never seen this. That's wonderful, and we thank God for that. But too often, we either see it in our travels or we hear about it, that within the same group of believers, there are those who are striving, not together, but against one another, and particularly striving to advance themselves, and not really being team players, or working together. And so the Philippian saints were competing against each other. And look at we get that in chapter 4. You might note that, and we're not going to read it, but in chapter 4, verse 2, we have those two sisters. But really, those two sisters are, I do not believe, the one and only problem in this assembly. I don't believe this whole epistle was written just because of those two sisters. I believe this was a problem within the assembly. I believe the problem with those two sisters was so publicly known that Paul could name them in a public epistle. Everybody else already knew that situation, and there's an exhortation for these sisters to get together and think alike and act together. Now, we have this, I think, in Corinth as well. We might say it was with teachers. You know, teachers were trying to gain their own little following. And it can happen in the church where those who minister the word actually compete, shall we say, for a following. And Paul says, and we read that already in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, he wasn't after a follower. That wasn't his purpose. But when we think of assemblies today, you know, there is a mentality today that bigger is better. It's not only in the world. It's not only with your bank account. There's this idea, if we have what is often referred to as the mega church, then we have the ultimate, the best combination, the best thing we could possibly have as far as the local assembly and church. We'll get a 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 6,000 membership situation, and that will certainly be the ideal. Number of years ago, in fact, it would be probably in the late 70s, our family, because I was on business, flew to California, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and I said, let's go for a ride up to see this particular individual who's on the radio quite often and teaches the word and preaches the word. And I thought that'd be nice sometimes it's nice to see a physical location and see where things are happening. I said, let's go up there. Well, we went up there. It just so happened they were having a service that afternoon because they were baptizing some people. And their parking lot was so huge, they had their own security patrol that went around with walkie-talkies and, you know, making sure that nobody was losing their hubcaps and whatever else goes on in the parking lot. It was huge. But, you know, what I found out, not that day, but I found out as we talked, actually this huge church that has maybe two services, each holding 3,000. But during the week, they actually break it down into much smaller groups so they can function. Because they really can't really, you know, the men who are in oversight, how do you know 3,000 people? How do you get 3,000 people to strive together? It's not easy. And you know something? I believe sometimes the bigger our assemblies get, doesn't mean that small assemblies don't have problems. But sometimes the bigger you get, the more divisions you get, and the more breakups you get, and the more striving against each other, perhaps, than with each other. And so we really want to think about, when we talk about mega churches, really, you know, what is the biblical pattern? Sometimes, you know, it's been said, and we used to say it in industry all the time, a camel is a horse designed by a committee. In other words, you get so many heads involved and you wind up with a monstrosity in a sense. But so they weren't really functioning together. And really the word here is the idea of entering a contest together. Some of you have been this week entering contests together. And because this is on tape, I won't necessarily say the nature of some of those contests with which you've been entering, because they might be misunderstood by those who are not here and here to take as to what you were actually doing with that Monopoly money the other night. I wouldn't want that to be misunderstood. But you have been entering contests together. And when you entered those contests together, the object for you in those contests was to work together. In all of my preteen years and most of my teen years, the assembly in which I was raised, always on July 4th, had a Sunday school picnic. And you know what it's like at Sunday school picnics. I assume they're somewhat similar today. The games might be slightly different, but I can remember they always had for our class, a three-legged race. You know what that is. They get two people, and they take the right leg of the one, the left leg, and they tie them together. So you have to run this race. I hated it. That and the potato sack race. I mean, to me, I just didn't like those, okay? But in that three-legged race, obviously you have to work together. You have to be synchronized, You have to get a system of, somebody has to say, and as you go, that means left foot, right foot, whatever you want to, however you want to work that out, right? And otherwise, what happens if you get out of sync in a three-legged race? You fall on your face. Okay? You get stumbling and you get out of sync and you fall on your face. And you know something? Assemblies fall on their face. Because we're not in sync. People are not really working together, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Look at chapter 4 and verse 3. Paul is talking about, and perhaps he is really speaking to Epaphroditus when he says, I entreat thee also, true yoke fellow. And this brother is mentioned in chapter 2 as the one who came from Philippi with the fellowship that we talked about earlier. He says, I entreat thee also, true yoke fellow, help those women. And I believe he's referring to the two sisters that are mentioned in the previous verse. He says, help those women who labored with me in the gospel. He doesn't say how they labored, what they did. I think we can get on dangerous ground if we start surmising all the things that they possibly did. It simply says they labor with him. And here's the interesting thing about that word. It is this word. It comes from the same word here, striving together. And this is the only two places in the New Testament that that word is used. Philippians 1:27 and Philippians 4:3. And the point is, they were working, what? Together. Now let me ask, does your assembly work together? And how well do you work with other people within your assembly? Do you work as a team, with a common goal and a common objective? Are you willing to put down maybe some of your ambitions at times to make sure the team and the assembly and the body and the believers accomplish something? Working together with one mind, he says. Thinking alike. You know what happens sometimes? We get our own objectives come to the forefront. And that's the way we think, rather than thinking, what is the objective for which we should all be working in the faith of the gospel? Your assembly should be a lighthouse. Your assembly should be a place where believers are built up and enabled to go out with the gospel of the Lord Jesus. Your assembly should be a place where Christians can be comforted and instructed and, if necessary, disciplined and so forth. But it takes a working together. Paul says, you look at Philippians 2:2, it says that they would be of the same love, of one accord, of one mind. And so they need to be thinking together. When it comes to unity, the world is unified against God. The psalmist kind of words it this way. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed. The world is unified in the sense that when we think of the world, we think of really the system without God. It's unified in its opinion in the sense that as a whole, they are anti-God, mankind. But when it comes to the New Testament church, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 1:10, there should be no divisions among you. And so, in you and me, in our local assembly, we have to strive together. We have to strive, in essence, to make sure that divisions do not occur. Again, as I said to you before, this does not mean that we all agree to disagree and truth gets compromised. But it means as we work for the protection and advancement of the faith of the gospel, we work together. Paul talks about being knit together. I always like that term because I don't know if this shirt is officially knit together. I don't know if it's a knitted shirt in a technical sense. But I know it has an awful lot of threads in it. Individual threads, you know? But when you look at it, we say this is one shirt, one piece of fabric, and yet there are many, many, many individual threads, some running vertical, some horizontal. And they're all knit together. They're close. And that's the way the assembly is to be. It talks about every joint supplying to the assembly, to the body. If I asked you, where's your thyroid gland? Point to your thyroid gland. Yeah, somebody going like this, you know. It's right there, okay, in your neck. You never even think about it. I mean, you don't get more. You see how my thyroid is? Okay. Unless you have a disease or a problem with it, you just don't do that. But your thyroid really has a lot to do with controlling the functions of your body. It puts out hormones that set the pace and rate of your heartbeat and other functions. And this little thing that we don't really think much about, if it gets out of whack, you will be out of whack. And many problems occur. Yet we don't think about it. And yet, assembly's like that, isn't it? Every part of the assembly has a function to play. We say this often, but it's true. And so we have to think that way. When it talks about being knit together in love, I remember, you know, there's always fads. We often joke, if we go into a home and we see an avocado green rug, we just say 1950. Okay, I mean, you can tell 1950. And other things, and then there's certain hobbies and certain things that come along. You remember when they used to, this was big for a while, where they would arrange artificial flowers? Could be real ones, but artificial typically on a board, and then they would pour this, it's not really plastic, but a plastic-looking material over it and cover it all up with plastic, you know. Well, this is the idea of knit together in love. It means really to kind of cover and hold everything together with love. In other words, love is that one thing that will knit together, hold things together in your assembly. In the world, things that would divide the world and cause division, in the assembly, if we're truly loving one another, and that means what? Putting ourselves down, making others more important, devoting ourselves to their good. That should bring it all together and hold it all together. But unfortunately, as in this assembly, there's strife. And while this word, striving together, is an athletic term picturing a team working together. The word strife in Philippians 2:3 that says, let nothing be done through strife and vainglory, that word has the idea of electioneering. We talked about this. And the thought of strategy. You know, when you get into competition, some of you, in your competition, you had strategy. You said, we'll put this person out for this particular aspect of the race, and we'll put that person out for the race, and we'll wait, we'll hold all our money and bet it. Ooh, the network. We'll, what was the word? Predict that we will come in first and so forth. So you had strategy. Perhaps you haven't experienced it yet. But the flesh has strategy. The flesh that's within us, you know, I think I'll do this, and that'll make me look this way, or I'll do this, and that'll make him or her look that way. And if they look that way, and I look this way, it'll advance me, and it'll kind of put them down. We have to be careful of that. It's within us to do that. In fact, it's within us to do some rather low acts. Even to the point maybe, and this has happened, to sabotage someone else's work or ministry in order to make yourself become advanced. That is what Paul says should never be true of us as believers, that we set out to destroy a brother or sister and their work simply, you know, to advance ourselves. And the Bible talks about good striving and bad striving. It tells us to strive together in prayer. And I want to stress corporate prayer to you. Let me ask a question. Don't raise your hand. How many of you faithfully go to your assemblies midweek, whether it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, midweek prayer meeting? You don't have to raise your hand. At least I know one now. How many of you really faithfully feel that's an important meeting? Or is that the one meeting, you know, this is midweek? If you're a sister, after all, I don't take public part. You really faithfully, you believe that meeting is important? You see, Paul talks about striving together in prayer. You probably know the story of Charles Spurgeon and where he ministered the Word of God, and often there were tours of the temple, it was called, I believe, and he was taking a group around, and he asked them if they wanted to see the power room. And they thought he meant the heater room, like that room over there. And he opened the door, and here are many saints on their knees praying. It wasn't even an announced meeting, but there were saints in that room praying for the ministry of the Word and so forth that was going on there. And God was working mightily. You see, that's the power. If your assembly is lacking power, it could well be because many of the saints see no necessity of striving together in prayer. It's different than individual prayer. If we're just talking individual prayer, as important as that is, we could all stay home, go into our closets, and pray. But now the assembly is coming together to pray. And you are praying as an assembly. And it's the assembly that is addressing God. And so Paul talks about striving together. He talks about striving together for the gospel here in 1 Corinthians 9. And in Colossians 1:29, he says, "Wherefore I also labor, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily." Do you know, in the last 10 years, the church has lost some flag bearers. There have been missionaries who were on the field for 30, 40, 50 years who are now home in glory. They weren't operating alone. They were part of a team, but they were out front. They were taking the gospel out, and they have fallen, in a sense. There were men of God who were godly men in the assembly, leading the assembly in this advancement of the gospel, the faith of the gospel. Let me ask tonight, is there anyone here who might be willing to pick the flag up
Are we ready to advance the gospel, or are we just going to leave the flag laying on the ground?
You know, when a man, for example, and he's certainly not the only one, well, I could name two. One, a foreign missionary, and one, a man that labored in this country. Let's say T. Ernest Wilson. And then at home, some of you would know George Sharp, let's say. Two men of God who have gone on now. Are we going to pick it up and run with it? Now remember, the flag bearer is not the only person, is he? There are people around him, following him, supporting him, functioning together. But we have lost. And we need to be striving, functioning. Paul said, and you can turn there, 1 Thessalonians and chapter 1. He said to the saints there at Thessalonica, he said, I always pray for you. Paul's an amazing man when it came to prayer. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 2, we give thanks to God always for you all, making mention of you in our prayers, remembering without ceasing your work of faith and labor of love and patience of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ in the sight of God our Father. And you can link those three statements to verses 9 and 10. For instance, work of faith. Many suggest that was their turning to God from idols. Their labor of love, that was their serving the living and true God. Their patience of hope, that was to wait for His Son from heaven. But I stress to you the thought there of their labor of love. That word labor, it means to sweat. It means to toil. When we think of the athlete, we think of sweat. We think of the expenditure of energy. And you know, we together need to be expending energy for the faith of the gospel. Are we doing anything? Are we, in your local assembly, are you an inputter? Are you sweating? Are you striving together with the saints with regard to this faith of the gospel? You know, we need to really think about not only striving together, but striving at all. It's possible to go through your Christian experience. And when it comes to write on your tombstone, I don't mean a pizza, and they look at your tombstone and they don't know what to write. Mr. Darby, you know, in talking about Lot, says that he was blessed of God, but he was absolutely of no use to God. In fact, he was a burden to everybody he came in contact with. That would be horrible, wouldn't it? Of no use to God, a burden to everybody he came in contact with. Wouldn't that be a horrible epitaph? And life goes away quickly. You know, you say, oh, I'm 16, I'm 22, I'm 28, or whatever. You say, oh, man, I got a long way to go. No, you don't. You really don't. If the Lord doesn't come, and I'll just pick a number, 30 years. If the Lord doesn't come in 30 years, the youngest of you, if you're 16, will be 46. And there's a chance that at the age of 46, you might have 2, 3, 4 children. And you might find out that your opportunities to the advancement of this gospel and this striving together in this effort is very limited. And next thing you know, you're not 46. you're 66 and 76. You say, it can't happen. I don't understand how I got here. I thought I, you know, it goes quickly.